right. Welcome back to this Wednesday's Across the Movie Aisle. I am your host, Sunny Bunch. I'm joined, as always, by Alyssa Rosenberg and Peter Suderman. Alyssa, Peter, how are you today?
I am great. Like, I'm fantastic.
I'm so happy to be talking about the Oscars with friends.
Thanks to everyone who is listening today and for bearing with us during this wild week. I was in Paris for 5 days with my wife and two children. We could do 20 minutes on that. I'm not going to because that would bore everyone. But it was a whole thing. We're back. I only had a 5-hour weather delay in Dulles. It's great. Yay. Anyway, Alyssa also is starting her new job. We're pulling the curtain back. We're taping Tuesday night. It's Alyssa's first day on the job. Alyssa, what are you doing?
So I am the new education director at the Allbritton Journalism Institute. The TLDR version of this is that I am the dean of a tiny experimental journalism school that is attached to the soon-to-be-renamed news site Notice, which is about to rebrand and hire every journalist in Washington, it seems like. But most of what I'm doing is running classes for and mentoring this group of really great early career journalists. We bring 10 of them, maybe hopefully soon to be more, to Washington every year for 2-year stints. They're embedded in the Notice newsroom. They do great reporting. We're going to have a really good time. It's awesome.
I will say, first of all, I'm not sure, what is your organization style guide on using internet acronyms in real life, IRL, if you will, because I'm not sure, not really sure if you should do TLDR in real life. That's dodgy.
You know, In meat space,
I don't know that that's a good idea.
I will take this to the Youngs in my office for a verdict tomorrow, and they can tell me what the rules are now. Because
wait, do the fellows get to vote?
On this question, I think so. I'll put it up for a vote in Slack, and they can tell us what the rules are because we're old.
We can have a Gen Z style guide. I'm sure that will go over well with everyone. Anyway, look, my point is, I'm trying to make some excuses here because we're probably not going to have a bonus episode, a proper bonus episode this week, but we're still going to have our Odyssey post on Friday. Everything should be back to normal next week. If you're lacking for Across the Movie Aisle content, of course, you can check out the group chat. Alyssa hosted the group. Alyssa's really been pulling like triple duty this week. You know, Peter was flying. I was flying. We were all messing around. But Alyssa not only ran the group chat during the Oscars, which is a really key perk of this whole thing that we're doing here. You get to chat with everybody and share, exchange ideas and stuff. It's fun. People like it. And also, Alyssa did a live stream with Ben Dreyfuss and Josh Barrow on their Central Air Substack live stream podcast thingy. I'm not sure how I feel about live stream still. It's a good podcast.
Yes, I don't know, because my wife is usually on it.
You have to disclose these things, Peter. You can't just say it's a good podcast. You have to, you know, you have some conflicts here. You have to make it clear to everybody. But no, Central Air, it's a fun show. Everybody enjoys that. We all listen. We all love it. And now on to this week's episode of Across the Movie Aisle. This podcast. It's the Oscars, baby. It's Hollywood's big night. We got lots of thoughts about the Oscars. I had to watch a replay after the fact, like a goober, like a idiot who used to record things on a VCR, except I watched it on Hulu, which was kind of nice.
You're just dedicated, Sonny.
Boy, let me tell you. Yeah, that's part of it. All right, a big surprise of the evening was Michael B. Jordan winning Best Actor for Sinners. He upset Timothy Chalamet and Leonardo DiCaprio, who had been considered to be duking it out as the favorites heading into the evening. It wasn't a total shock. Michael B. Jordan, after all, did win the SAG trophy earlier in award season, or whatever it's called, the Actors Awards, whatever they call it now. But it was still a relatively surprising upset. A lot of the rest of the evening kind of played out like we thought it would. Paul Thomas Anderson won Best Director and Best Adapted Screenplay. One battle after another, won for Best Picture, despite late-breaking shifts in the prediction markets that suggested a Sinner's upset was in the offing. Ryan Coogler won Best Original Screenplay. Sinners won Best Cinematography, which was a category that was kind of up in the air. Maybe we can discuss that a little bit because I have some thoughts on that. Netflix's Frankenstein won a handful of technical awards. I think it won 3 awards, including makeup, production design, and costuming. Jesse Buckley won like the most foreordained Oscars of all time. Like everyone has been saying Jesse Buckley was going to win the Oscar since this movie debuted at, I believe, Cannes whenever Cannes happens. The supporting actor category was also kind of up in the air. Sean Penn wound up taking it, stealing the award from my man Delroy Lindo. Nonsense. But I will say at least Amy Madigan did win Best Supporting Actress, capping off one of the more entertaining award season runs we've seen. There were some silly moments, not including Conan doing intentionally silly things. Conan O'Brien, of course, the host, did a good job. He was very funny. But for instance, one of the winners of K-pop, Demon Hunter, said she was happy she could finally provide an example of Koreans winning film awards, as if Parasite didn't like steal Once Upon a Time in Hollywood's Best Picture trophy a few years back. The awards really got spread around. F1 won an award. Avatar Fire and Ash took home a trophy. Good for them. Again, Conan, funny. The In Memoriam segment was moving, as always, though, you know, there's some omissions. No James Vanderbeek. I guess he's a TV guy. No Brigitte Bardot. Come on. I was surrounded by French people who were outraged. They were throwing their baguettes into the street when that happened. We can discuss the, you know, who got the longer tributes, maybe who didn't deserve it. These things are always fraught. You're always going to have to make choices somewhere. I've seen a bunch of people try to spark a protest about Robert Duvall not getting enough attention, as if this, you know, it's because he's a conservative, I guess. I don't know. That doesn't seem right. I don't know. Look, again, watching it after the fact, watching it without commercials, watching it on Hulu, you know, 2 days later, it seemed like a pretty good show. Alyssa, you were watching it live. What were the vibes in the group chat like?
Unlike the two of us.
First, I just want to thank everyone who turned out for the group chat. It was really, really fun to hang out with all of you guys. Jake, our man, as always. But a lot of folks who haven't even necessarily been that active in the comments, it's great to know you're out there. And it's great to get a look just sort of deeper in your minds and in your knowledge and of an appreciation for film. That has been just for me one of the best things about all of this since going independent back in October. So thanks. You really made my night. I thought it was an really good show. And I think a lot of what worked is that Conan O'Brien did what a host is supposed to do. He worked really hard to make sure that everyone, both at home and in the theater, had a good time. And I think it's, you know, there are a lot of people who talk about how hard it is to host award ceremonies. And I think some of that perceived difficulty stems from the fact that people have gotten away from the idea of what hosting is for, right? Like, you are supposed to set the stage. You're supposed to modulate the tone, but you're supposed to leave a lot of room for spontaneity and fun and for other people to contribute, in this case, by, you know, through their, you know, their acceptance speeches. And I thought he balanced things really well. You know, the opening bit where he is dressed up as Aunt Gladys from Weapons was very funny and silly, the kind of thing that he can pull off that someone like Jimmy Kimmel just doesn't have enough of sort of a goofy spirit to really do. He managed to shift into a more somber tone by talking about the movies as important, not because of their social messages or the change that they cause, but because they are an example of not just global creativity, but collaboration, right? I mean, he managed to talk about the importance of the movies in a way that was rooted in the work. He did not oversell any of that. I saw a lot of people just sort of befuddled by like the Marty Supreme butt drum. I was like, I actually kind of liked that. It was like, it's incredibly silly. But the Oscars take themselves a little bit too seriously, a lot too seriously in many cases. And this was a night where I really felt like I didn't have a single complaint. Right. I mean, that moment about, you know, sort of ignoring Parasite and the rise of Korean cinema and TV, including on Netflix. Okay, that's like a small false note. I think it's forgivable in the sort of the spirit of the moment. But a lot of the people who won just seemed genuinely delighted and excited. you know, I think, you know, Michael B. Jordan getting up and like thanking God and his mother, you know, really being moved by the fact that his dad was over from Ghana, which just felt really human and lovely, right? I mean, I did not like Hamnet. I did not like Jesse Buckley's performance in that movie. I am sort of sitting with my feelings about Jesse Buckley because they've changed so quickly. But her up there thanking her husband and being like, I want to have 20,000 more babies with you, but like, I love my daughter. Just sort of everyone who got up on that stage and won something last night or on Sunday night felt like a human being, really feeling genuinely moved. You know, I would have a martini with Paul Thomas Anderson any night. And it also just felt like a really lovely celebration of both the crews that Anderson has put together over the years, the people who work with him repeatedly, and the crew of artists that Ryan Coogler is building now and who hopefully will be making great movies with him for decades to come. You know, Sinners would have been my pick for Best Picture. Coogler probably would have been my pick for Best Director. I think, you know, One Battle After Another is excellent in quite a few ways, but it also has, you know, just some big flaws running through this, you know, hunk of diamond that it is, particularly the multiple endings. I'm anti the multiple endings. Maybe your perspective has changed, Peter. But it was just a night where there was no decision that I felt like I could be mad about, no joke that seemed to really sink, no speech that felt incredibly off kilter. And I do think the In Memoriams were the best of that variety I've ever seen. I mean, look what happened to Robin Michelle Reiner is just a horrible tragedy, right? It is just a, you know, a horror of the kind that, you know, no community, you know, knows how to deal with. And I thought, you know, Billy Crystal's tribute to his art, to their political work together, you know, it went, those and the other tributes that followed, you know, felt personal in a way that those montages so rarely do, and felt, frankly, better than a lot of the sort of scripted presenter patter that was sort of meant to be personal but didn't totally have the feel or depth of it. I thought it was really exceptionally good. You know, someone in Vulture wrote that it was very much a ceremony for people who had actually seen the movies, right? Like, there are jokes that you just weren't going to get, like, if you hadn't seen Weapons, if you hadn't seen Marty Supreme.
Yeah.
And it's probably no mistake that the ratings for the show were consequently, you know, lower than they've been in a while. This was not a huge box office year. There was not
down 9% from last year, the lowest rating since 2022, which is the first year that movies were kind of back after the pandemic.
And there is this, you know, that is seen, that is a figure and a presentation that get to, I think, a real challenge for the movies, right? Because the Oscars are predicated on being this mass cultural event. Movies, you know, as Timothée Chalamet has so eloquently, not the word, but recently put it, you know, want to be a big populist enterprise. But, you know, an awards show that is smaller and more centered on people that love the form might be a better awards show, even if a less popular one.
Yeah. One thing that was, I agree with nearly all that. I mean, there were a couple of interesting themes, tidbits kind of running through Conan's work in particular. It was interesting with some of the folks who are in the room and with what is happening to the Oscars itself in a few years as it heads to YouTube. But there was a definite anti-giant tech company theme to what he was doing. He calls out Ted Sarandos by name and says, "Hey, Ted, this is what we're doing. We're all getting here together just like you hate. Just like you want us to monitor, you want to." And that was interesting. Because again, it is both a TV show that people watch in their rooms, right? Separate from everybody else. But it's also a social event that people partake on social media. And it's a social event for Hollywood. It's the big party that Hollywood throws itself. There's like an interesting collision of things there. But also there's an anti-Amazon sentiment. You know, why isn't Amazon MGM nominated for zero awards? Why isn't the company that sells me my toilet paper also winning Oscars? You know, like, and there was one other, the YouTube, the ads. My favorite bit of the night was the Jane Lynch's ad series, interrupting, it's going to be on YouTube. Everything's going to be normal. And then he had some ads jump in. It was very good. And it was very clever, I thought. But Peter, is it self-defeating? Because this is the tech giants are coming to absorb the whole industry. Should they be making these jokes?
Yeah, they absolutely should be making those jokes. It might also be self-defeating to do so. These are not mutually exclusive. They should be making those jokes because, look, Conan, part of being a good host is knowing the room. And Conan read that room perfectly. He knew who he was playing to. And he knew it in two ways. One, he knew the people in that theater. And he knows that even if they are taking those Netflix paychecks, they are at least a little bit uncomfortable about it. Maybe they're like, yeah, what are you going to do? Turn down $30 million? Like, fair enough. I wouldn't turn down $30 million either. But I think they are all a little uncomfortable about it. You saw this actually implied quite a bit with the Ben Affleck, Matt Damon press tour about their Netflix movie, for which they surely got paid buku bucks, for a movie that in 10 years ago would have gone to theaters. And then Ben Affleck sold his AI company to Netflix right afterwards, right? He's playing to that room. But he's also playing, I think, as Alyssa says, to an audience of people who have seen the movies. And yes, many of these movies, most of them are now on streaming. But the people who have seen the movies by this point in the year and are tuning into the Oscars are quite likely to have seen at least a few, maybe not all, but at least a few of them in the theaters. And that is good. You got to play to your base. You got to play to the people who love the thing. Playing to your base and playing to the people who love your thing, however, does risk turning the movies into, sorry, opera or ballet. And that is my worry here. And you see the ratings are down and you see the trajectory of, the box office. Yes, I understand. If I understand correctly, that at this point in the year, box office is doing relatively well for a post-pandemic year. But it's been tough post-pandemic, and Hollywood is not clearly and straightforwardly finding ways to reach new young moviegoers, and I don't think that this awards ceremony is going to change that. Conan is a sort of Gen X comedy icon, but when I say I don't think this award ceremony is going to change that, that doesn't mean I didn't like it. And also, doesn't mean I think that this is the place to do it. This is the place to capture people after they have already gone back to the theater. It's not the place to convince them to go. And that's why I like this ceremony, right? This is because they understand that the Oscars are not the place where this is not the moment where you're going to convince people. This is the moment where the people who are maybe a little bit on the edge, but are basically already in your camp. This is where you talk to them. This is a moment for movie lovers, for people who are fans of the form and who are fans of the theatrical experience. And trying to make it something else would have been the wrong move.
Yeah. And there can be something like weird and flop sweaty about, I mean, it's the, how do you do fellow kids? Like, how do you do fellow aficionados of like Bridgerton clip reels on Instagram? Like, what's the point of that? It looks dorky, right? It lacks an elegance and sophistication. And what you want is for people to come back the next year and be like, oh yeah, this is the conversation that I want to participate in. This is, the community of informed people that I'm part of now.
Like 4 years ago, Sonny, you will know the exact year. They had that insane, text in vote for like most iconic biggest movie moment or something where the freaking Flash entering the speed zone.
Yes. He slips into the speed stream.
And they saves the universe.
I'm sorry. Right. I'm sorry. Some of us enjoy seeing Flash save the universe in Zack Snyder's Justice League, and some of us voted for it 7,000 times via our botnets.
All right, so clearly, clearly you had
let's not say things we can't take back, Suderman.
I'm not taking that back. There's no way. And it was they. This was, I think, the same year or around the same time that they were considering doing the Oscar for Best Popular Film, which is the most ridiculous thing you could imagine, right? Like, we're going to give Best Picture to a movie, like, we're going to we're going to basically label it a not popular film and then have a separate Oscar for movies that people actually have seen.
Yeah.
Just a disaster plan. And this thing that when it finally appeared at the Oscars, they had announced this months before, they kind of had to go through with it. When it finally appeared, it was just buried right before a commercial break in hopes that you didn't notice that they did incredibly embarrassing thing. And this movie, the two Conan O'Brien shows have had none of that. They have made fun of YouTube, and this year they made fun of Netflix. They have said, the thing we do is we make stuff for the big screen that people can see together.
I will say, this is all true, and I think it's right. And I think, objectively speaking, it's probably bad for ratings just because, you can see them. But also, I'm going to say something possibly controversial here. And I say this as somebody who loves Conan O'Brien, who has enjoyed very much watching his two Oscars hosting turns.
You're not going to talk shit about Conan O'Brien. We're going to fight if you do.
Conan O'Brien is a bad host because he does not appeal to the widest possible number of people. And this has been true throughout his career. This has been true pretty much everywhere he's gone. He's a niche taste for niche audiences, and I'm part of that niche. I like it.
So
who does.
Who is the great? Do you want Tom Cruise to host the Oscars? Like, who is? Like,
I don't know.
The Mr. Beast.
I don't know.
Oscar. Like, is this the Mr. Beast show? Like, who? But seriously, though,
Mr. Beast is laying people off. His empire is shrinking. We need the Theo Von Oscars at this point, and no one wants that. No one wants the fucking Theo Von Oscars.
Agreed. Yeah.
Theo Von fans don't want that.
Like in the absence of a mass consensus cultural convener, I think Conan is about the best choice that you can have for this particular show because he understands the assignment and he can and consistently executes on it.
I kind of agree with this. I mostly agree with this. And again, I enjoy the show as a thing to watch. And enjoy on the television, I greatly enjoy it. I'm just saying that everything we have seen from Conan O'Brien over his entire career suggests that he is not a mass figure.
Okay, he's not a draw, right? Like your argument is he's not a draw on his own. He is not able to do the outreach on his own. And it's not at all clear that there's anyone who can.
You know who it should be? Is Jay Leno. That's who should be hosting the Oscars.
Do the kids know who Jay Leno is?
Yeah.
I don't think it doesn't matter. You don't need the kids. You don't need the kids. You need somebody who like does his borscht belt nonsense and, you know, just I don't think I'm even using that term right. You need the mass appeal guy. You need the guy who is not that. Anyway, I would rather watch Conan O'Brien than Jay Leno. I would 100%. I would rather watch Conan O'Brien or David Letterman or I don't know.
I love David Letterman as a host. He was not a great Oscars host.
I'm just saying, I would Chris Rock. Uma? Chris Rock.
Oprah.
I would enjoy that. Like
Alyssa
I enjoy that.
Sunny. Like, yeah, okay, Chris
I'm
Rock.
Just saying, I'm just saying
Chris Rock. I'll give you Chris Rock, but I'm also not sure that Chris Rock has more mass appeal than Conan O'Brien.
Yeah,
they both seem to me like they're
there,
both
like,
excellent.
I mean, the slap was definitely the biggest moment at the Oscars in a long time, but like, what do you do next? Like, I don't know.
Kevin
I think
Hart.
Chris Rock would know.
Kevin Hart.
Kevin Hart just gets up there and reads Polymarket odds for 3 hours. Like, shoot me in the face,
Kevin Hart. I'm just throwing this out there. I don't. You know, you effete snobs and your ivory towers.
Sonny, you're trying to fix the problem at the. What you're trying to fix the wrong problem.
And your you know, your ironic distance. That's fine. Some of us just want, you know, a little more earnestness. You know, a little straightforward.
I will buy the Kevin Hart, Jay Leno Oscars when the movies themselves reflect that kind of audience. But this is the good thing and the problem with this year, with the movies now, is that this Oscars host, Conan O'Brien, reflected the somewhat niche nature of this set of movies and of who they appealed to.
The star of an Oscar-nominated movie, Conan O'Brien. That grossed like $7.
Yeah.
And has been seen by 3 people. I'm just saying.
Maybe Timothy Chalamet needs to not make a movie for a year and then host the show. I would think that could be wildly entertaining.
This is the one person I was thinking about as an alternative is Chalamet, and he obviously couldn't do it this year with Marty Supreme.
Yeah.
Because he wants to win. He badly wants to win one. Yeah. And I think we should. I would say it's interesting because there's a lot of chatter like, oh, why didn't he win? What happened? And I think the simple fact of the matter is he didn't win because he was playing a character that nobody likes. And he has been kind of on the campaign trail, as it were, constantly for the last 2 years. There was a lot of talk like, oh, the opera thing killed him. And I don't think that's true because that whole thing blew up literally the last day of Oscar voting. Like that was like a late, that was like a, what, not an, that wasn't even an October surprise. No, that was like a November 12th surprise, you know?
No,
that was
the Oscars reflect the way the Academy Awards for Best Actor and Actress reflect the way that Hollywood treats men and women, which is that the Academy likes to reward ingenues because they're not going to be given a lot of stuff to do once they hit middle age, and they make men wait because the roles are there for longer. I mean, that's not actually that's not a causality thing, but it is very much the case that the Academy seems to like to reward ingenues and make men wait a little bit later in their careers.
Look at last year, Mikey Madison wins. It was very funny. It was actually very funny watching Mikey Madison come out to present the award this year, because I was like, oh yeah, Mikey Madison won for Anora, a movie I liked. I liked Anora a great deal. I liked Anora a lot. I was glad it won Best Picture. It was probably my favorite of those movies that was nominated that year. I can't remember off the top of my head what else was nominated. But like when she came out, I was like, oh, that's right. She's a Best Actress winner for the rest of her career, for the next 60 years of Mikey Madison movies. It's going to be Oscar winner Mikey Madison. And I still kind of in my head think of her as the crazy girl from Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, or also the crazy girl from Scream 6, Scream 5, whichever Scream that was.
I think she's going to be Frances Haugen in The Social Reckoning.
I don't know what that means. What?
She's the so the sequel to The Social Network. She's playing the whistleblower, Frances Haugen.
It's not crazy Haugen. Enough. She needs to be crazier. She needs to be at January 6th throwing firebombs at cops. That's what she needs to be, throwing bricks at a police officer on January 6th. That's what, because this movie's supposed to be at least about, kind of, right? January 6th, isn't that the rumor? That's how Facebook led to the destruction of our democracy and the end of
Aaron Sorkin,
transfer of power.
Such a good writer, such a good filmmaker, such an incredibly bad chronicler of what actually happened in the world.
All right, so let's talk. Let's continue to talk about the Oscars here, because I want to ask if there was any. Were there any big? What's your least favorite win? I guess I'll put it that way. What was, if you could go back and change any one award, who would you swap out? Alyssa.
Mm-hmm. My brain is so fried from the last 2 nights. My son woke up at 4 this morning for no particularly good reason. But I just I don't even know who I would choose, but not Jesse Buckley.
Oh, poor Jesse Buckley. She gave such a good speech. Peter.
I was thinking Jesse Buckley too. I always long for a director picture split, right? This almost never happens. And I always long for it because otherwise, what are we doing here? Why is there a best picture and a best director award? if they're the same, if they are fundamentally being judged on the same thing. And this is a, you know, sort of a question people have raised for years. How can you be best? How can you have the best picture without the best director? The director is the author of the film. Well, the Best Picture Award is at least theoretically a little bit more of an overall award that also goes to the producer. The producer gets to speak in a way that the best director doesn't. So there's a version of me. Jesse Buckley is my pick, but there's a version of me that answers this question with, I kind of wish that Ryan Coogler, or maybe Yorgos, actually, maybe Yorgos Lanthimos, because I love Begonia, had won Best Director, even if One Battle was still going to win Best Picture.
I see where you're coming from, Peter. I would strip Paul Thomas Anderson of Best Adapted Screenplay, because for as many pleasures as One Battle After Another has, and it has several, the problem with the film is that it's a mess. It's a mess. It is really poorly structured. It is hugely repetitive in the middle section. All of the Christmas clan stuff.
Christmas
should have been
Adventurers
dropped.
Club.
I'm sorry. No, I call it the Christmas clan with a like Christmas with a K and then clan. Yeah. Because all of those sequences are funny on their own and yet slam the momentum of the film to a stop and also create this huge confusion, this huge thematic conclusion at the end of the film. I like it doesn't.
But then why is Lockjaw tracking down Willa? Right? Like we need some motivation for that.
He's trying to track down Willa because he wants to have her as, he should be tracking her down because he wants her as her daughter, or he wants to regain Perfidia or something. Regardless, that way also you don't have Lockjaw getting killed twice for some reason. This solves a lot of your double endings problems. You get rid of one of the endings entirely.
Well, you have to kill him in the action movie sense, and then you have to kill him again thematically.
Yeah, in a good screenplay, you do that in the same scene. You do that in one scene, not two scenes. That has an entirely extraneous subplot.
I also think if you kill him in the action movie sense, in that like, and he's killed by a fellow white supremacist. Like, I mean, again, like, the method is the same.
Anyway, I would strip Paul Thomas Anderson of his screenplay trophy, and I would give it to Will Tracy for Begonia, because Begonia is much. I think it's a more narratively cohesive screenplay. It is. It hits all of the proper notes. And it's very funny. It's very clever. And the performances are great. Like the fact that Jesse Plemons didn't even get nominated. We should have had Jesse Plemons
nuts.
And Michael B. Jordan nominated, the two Friday Night Lights guys battling
that
it out.
That should have been the tie.
But we didn't get that. We got robbed of that. I think Begonia is it is also frankly a better movie about our moment than One Battle After Another is. People get very mad at me when I say this. I don't think One Battle After Another is a great movie about our moment, despite the ICE, you know, immigration overtones of it all. I like Begonia, Eddington,
After the Hunt
and something else. There was something else. After the
Julia
Hunt.
Roberts,
yeah, well, maybe
film?
After the Hunt.
Is that what
that
you're thinking
of? Anyway.
Which we all liked and everyone else hated. There's like four other people on the planet who think that is a good movie who aren't us.
And they should all come on across the movie aisle. Yeah, we should have a special club. Maybe I'll
but
like make
seriously, that
t-shirt.
Movie is hated.
That movie is hated. Like, the movie is hated.
In a way that I sort of understand it also. I'm like, what? This is like a, it's kind of funny. Yeah.
Could we take a second to talk about things that we like loved / were excited about? Because there were a couple things that I was really excited about.
Absolutely. What were you excited about, Alyssa? Excitement is much better than hate.
Michael B. Jordan. Oh my God. I was. I mean, those were two of my favorite performances of the year. Such an interesting sort of exploration of masculinity in a way that didn't feel like this is an exploration of masculinity. Incredible distinction between the characters. And also just like, you know, I saw Fruitvale Station at Sundance the one year I was able to go. And I remember walking out of the theater and being like, oh, there's something here. And, you know, I think that a lot of people had that feeling watching Black Panther. But man, you know, it is awesome to see an actor and director just vibe on each other the way that Coogler and Jordan right. clearly do. And like, I want the two of them to make movies together until they're 80, right? Like, I adore that collaboration so much. And, you know, I think Coogler should win for Best Director again. I think Sinners is just a stronger, better structured, sort of more surprising movie throughout than One Battle After Another is. But if I couldn't get both, just seeing Jordan that thrilled made me really, really, really happy.
Sinners is a more coherently directed film, for sure. But I'll say, I watched One Battle After Another on Sunday on one of my flights back from Los Angeles. I think this is the third or fourth time I've seen it. And that movie is growing on me. I don't love it. Like, I don't like just sort of, it's, I'm not going to gush about it. But that movie is growing on me because as big as the kind of macro thematic problems are with it, every single moment works. And I actually disagree with Sunny about it being repetitive in the middle. I think all of the repetition actually kind of pulls you along, right? Like, I know we had discussions about you even thinking that the roof jumping scene, the shot patterns were repeated too often. And similarly, like you, I think you said something that you sort of had a complaint about the River of Hills, the chase sequence, right? The shot patterns are repeated. And I watched it again. I was like, oh no, I'm just like, I'm in it in the moment. And when I think back on it, I'm like, nope, I have problems with it. But every single moment in that movie works real well. It is just it's a few small beers of a movie, a succession of little pleasures. And 2.5 hours of little pleasures is not something to sneer at the movies.
Yeah, but like not something to sneer at is...
Yeah, maybe
like
not,
that bar,
also not...
That bar is
maybe
too,
also
yeah.
not best picture, but I like it more and more.
I'll say it's better than his previous Pynchon adaptation, but it's still yes. easily in the bottom half of his works.
I agree with that, but I like it more than I did. I'm yeah. less annoyed by the things I was annoyed by and more enamored with the things that work.
Yeah, my happiest, again, I'm just really glad Amy Madigan won. I've been pushing for Amy Madigan since I saw Weapons and was just kind of blown away by what she did as Aunt Gladys, which is, you know, a very odd role and an amusingly reactionary one for reasons we could maybe get into it at a later time. But it is a fascinating piece of work and a real pleasure to see a film like that get rewarded at the Oscars. I think it was... It's a real problem that the movie only got one nomination, period. I'm glad it won for it, but that is a movie that does everything that One Battle After Another does better than One Battle After Another does it.
It should have absolutely had a screenplay.
That
screenplay is quite good.
I don't know that it
would have
won,
level.
I don't know, because no, I actually think Ryan Coogler is a great win for Sinners.
I didn't say it should have won in the original screenplay category. I said it should have had a nod, and that movie, it's quite good on the scene level, right? The dialogue, the back and forths, but where it's really good is that as a structural marvel. That is a movie that is really difficult to make hold together and to make work when it's movies where you're 25 minutes in and you see a movie a week and you have for 30 years, like me, when you don't know where it's going, that's usually a bad sign. That's usually a sign that this movie has no idea what it is doing. You don't know because you're like, this is a disaster and a mess. 25 minutes into that movie, I was like, where is this going? And I knew, you can tell, it's going somewhere specific that is planned, that the writer knows, is like, you feel like you are just in great hands. And yet you also are like, I have no idea where I'm being carted off to.
It's also
in a way that is extremely rare.
It's also in some ways the movie of the year that is most comfortable with ambiguity and irresolution, right? I mean, you know, there are images like the, you know, automatic rifle circulating over the house that are never explained. There is not sort of a moment of triumph. And Gladys represents sort of a number of things, but there's, you know, and there's no moment where Zach Kreger sort of felt the need to underline things in a way that is almost always a mistake, right? Like there's no like American Girl needle drop. There's no like, there's no sort of letter from Perfidia. There's no, you know, I mean, I think the ending of Begonia works really well, but like those montages at the end are nothing if not unsubtle. And, you know, this is not a movie where like the final girl is okay. In fact, the final boy is a very much not. And I like more than anything, not more than anything, I liked a lot of things about that movie, including very good performances from Josh Brolin and Julia Garner, in addition to Madigan. But I just admired its respect for the audience and it like an audience's ability to handle strange, you know, just moments of strangeness and unease.
Absolutely. The respect for the audience is that is a movie that you have to have a lot of faith. Let me put it this way. If you're the head of a major motion picture studio and somebody comes to you and says, hey, I would like, you know, $40 million to make this weird kind of anthologized, you know, structurally wonky movie about child abduction and possibly, you know, abuse. And they go, yeah, okay, here you go. Here's your money. Let's do it. And then to have that same filmmaker, you know, not hold the audience's hand through it is a real marvel. So, you know, kudos to everybody involved there.
Kreger's going to end up with a best director. I don't know about a best picture, but he's going to end up with a screenplay and a director nomination within the next decade.
Probably for Resident Evil.
Yeah, maybe not for Resident Evil, but come on, guy. Like, that movie is so clever at every, like, just every moment, every cut. You just, like, sense a kind of, like, you sense a controlling intelligence from moment one. And you don't know what it's doing to you, but you know it's doing something intentional, and that's so rare.
Yeah. And one thing, I'm totally with Sonny on being delighted about Amy Madigan. Just the look that her husband, Ed Harris, gave her when she won, where he was like, you know, and I had assumed that Ed Harris had won an Academy Award. He's been nominated 4 times and not won. And that sort of spousal, like, I told you look is such a wonderful thing in a long-running couple like that. And look, I think, you know, when you have two people who are married and are in similar careers, like everyone has their sort of highs and their lows, and there's often one person who's sort of more famous than the other. And his just like delight and sort of clear certainty that she was going to win was awesome.
They've been married since 1983.
Long time to be married. It's almost as long as I have been alive. All right. Here is what I want. I wanted to close because we are now halfway through. We're now halfway through the decade. You know, assuming you start the awards in 2021, we've got 5 years of movies, 21, 22, 23, 24, 25 now, 5 years. As such, that means we've got half a decade of winners to choose from. I'm curious what you guys think are the best wins so far. You could only pick the winners. You can't go back and pick old nominations, right? So of the 5 winners, and I'm only going to do 4 categories here. I'm going to do actor, actress, director, and film. Okay. Best acting win of the decade so far, Alyssa. We're going to start most recent to oldest. Michael B. Jordan this year.
Adrian Brody last year for The Brutalist, Cillian Murphy for Oppenheimer, Brendan Fraser for The Whale, and Will Smith for King Richard. Will Smith won Best Picture, Best Actor Oscar for King Richard, right before the slap. Or maybe right after. Was that before or after? It was before. Anyway, Alyssa, what did you, what would you pick? What would you say is the best of those?
Man,
gotta pick one.
Hey, everybody. If you want to hear the rest of this episode, you gotta go to movieisle.substack.com and sign up for the whole thing, because you know, we're not having a bonus episode this week. I don't want to give away everything for you know, everything that we're doing. Got to give the paying member something. So if you want it all, go sign up at movieisle.substack.com. You're gonna want to hear our picks on this. A bunch of good picks. It's a fun little game here that we're doing, but it's it'll be great. Go sign up. You'll get access to the chat. You'll get it all. You'll get it all. You'll get everything we're doing. So go do that.